Does anybody else want to ask a question?
The building, I actually think, will be locked.
I'll text and call the questions. How locked are they?
Well, I think you can ask any question and see if anybody knows the answer.
Well, okay, Pierre started with formulas for the integration of the ants and the hummingbirds and zero modes. So the question is how unique this measure is. If it's more a question for you, Pierre.
So maybe you can say, what, how unique?
Yeah, so you had to, there was a formula for the
measure V and
Okay. So
the one for the lambdas you're happy with. It's the one for the.
For the lambdas, I'm happy because I know it's unique. For that part, I'm not happy because I don't know whether it's unique.
Why would you say unique? What's the meaning?
Well, the meaning. So this is a project of high gamma flights.
So
four gamma flights,
right? You're asking why that combination?
Or? Yeah, why that combination? Is this
so? Yeah, so it has to satisfy. So the ends are not all independent. Okay, so the short answer is so. So if you want to reproduce it, if we choose a gauge for the W's, so the W's are the conjugates to the lambdas, and they have a gauge invariant.
Mm-hmm.
So you can choose a gauge in which they just have 11 components non-vanishing.
Mm-hmm.
And the other ones can be gauged to zero.
Mm-hmm.
And then in that gauge, this should of course be proportional to dw plus dwab with some bunch of lambdas left over.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the way to guarantee that is that this thing should have certain properties. So for example, N. So this is W again, and it looks like you have, so SO10 looks like you have 45 of these. So naively you have 45 independent of these, but of course that's not true.
Yeah.
They satisfy constraints. So NMN, gamma, gamma N lambda is, I don't remember correctly, it's something like J times well, this one is certainly J times lambda alpha and some coefficient there. So this measure has to satisfy, tensor has to satisfy constraints. If you start to contract with lambdas, it gives you zero.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, this is a pretty neat thing that works. I don't know if that's the way to see that.
I guess is, my question is really the emphasis on the unique. So you
show. So, okay, how do you show? So suppose lambdas point to just in the plus direction. Which is lambda plus zero.
Mm-hmm.
It's clear that with that choice of lambda, you can gauge precisely these five away.
Mm-hmm.
With delta W is. All the lambdas in the plus direction here, what you want is these guys are vanishing unless the NNNs are all.
I think I agree that there's a unique choice if I choose all the lambda, if I make this choice.
Yeah, but then you do Lorentz transformation as long as it's state transformed.
Do we want to be engaged? I mean, it's kind of a discussion with, maybe it's easier.
Lots of different.
Yeah.
Yeah, but maybe we don't want some of this to be.
You should get it around the room.
No, yeah, that doesn't make sense.
Does it pick got people speaking in the audience?
I have mics in the room, but I hear not loud enough.
I think we don't need fading discussions.
Well, it was my policy.
we'll just take everything Nathan says.
Thank you.
Are there also mics in office?
Okay, so going to continue.
So can I turn it off?
No, if you turn it off, she'll notice because they're mine.
Yeah, I'm back.
The thing I couldn't understand.
Inside a box or something.
When we gave the, I'm going to turn it off. When we
gave the lecture, how did the camera adjust itself? Is it automatic?
The camera takes a picture of the entire board and you, every cell off every few seconds. And hopefully that's enough to capture the lecture.
But it actually focuses on what you're writing.
Yes, yeah, actually, so Doug can do that remotely. He was actually interested in the talk, so he was listening and focusing. But if we're going to have more Blackboard talks that he's not going to be at, you know, we could get someone to volunteer. It's not apparently. He said it's not very hard to control the camera.
You've been watching yourself?
Hi, Doug.
That's a big problem.
So in any case, yeah, if our ESCO grant, then you know it in a certain frame, then you know it in all frames.
Now the point is that that potential, if you start with that potential with the properties you mentioned,
so just
that is more than one invariant potential.
If you choose it to be in this direction, then the only thing that contributes here, so these are all, say that this has U1^5 halves, and all of these have to have U1^5 halves, 5 halves times 8 gives you 20.
No, I mean, I agree with this.
No, but I mean, it's obvious. So in order to get something non-vanishing, we need all 10 of these. So to have the chart plus 3. Mm-hmm. So that means essentially the unity fixes this NAV. So when you split SO10 to U5, the vector splits in U5 and 5 bar. So we call it NA bar. So these have U1 charge plus 1, these have U1 charge minus 1. So all of these have to be NAB, NCD, and we call it A1, B1. And then there's a unique way to contract them, just you have to use the epsilon, and that allows you to contract them in a unique way. So it's unique in this frame that you relate to.
Yeah,
lambda's pointing on strength.
Okay, but if it's Lorentz invariant and it works when it's pointing in this direction, then it's unique.
And lambda is just an SO10 over U5, so any I can get from this to any other to a spinner by doing SO10. So I mean, it's a constant factor, but that's not what you're asking me.
Yeah, that's okay. That's
fine. So no one thinks.
Okay, yeah. Slightly special case, which I have better at my fingertips. I'm not really an expert at this stuff, which is the Hertzsprung-Riemann-Roth theorem. So for the Hertzsprung-Riemann-Roth theorem, I have some vector bundle over some complex manifold, and I have these functions called Schur classes of the manifold. And then and you can build a Schur character out of this. And then the Hertzsprung-Riemann-Roth theorem says that the euler characteristic of the bundle, so you calculate the alternating sum of the dimensions of the cohomology groups of the bundle, is an integral over the manifold of this Turing class times what's called Todd class of F. And this is a really fundamental object in the relationship between K-theory and cohomology, and we all understand that deep rings are somehow related to K-theory. And in fact, people have pointed out that there are ways of formulating the action for a brain coupled to the type 2 A or B superstring, which really reflects the structure in some important way. So I just want to remind you what a top class is. A top class of X means the top class of the tangent bundle of X. And a top class for a line bundle has a formal expression of this nature. So now I think we understand why I'm giving this story. This struck me immediately when I saw your formula for the vacuum solution. And this has to be somehow related, seems to me. I don't know how it's related, but it has these. So there's a sign difference, but the sign difference is not crucial. Some conventions arise in different places. And then how do you do this in a tangent bundle? Well, you pretend that the tangent bundle can be written as a sum of line bundles, and then the property that the Todd class has is that it's multiplicative. So this, the Todd class of the tangent bundle will be the product of these lambda i's over 1 minus lambda j, so 1 minus e to the minus lambda j. And actually, if you now write this as a symmetric, in terms of the symmetric polynomials and the lambdas, those serve as the Turing classes of the tangent bundle. So that this gives a sort of prescription for how to calculate. But this is the one that really caught my attention when we looked at a vacuum solution. So has anybody noticed this? Have you thought about this? I mean, in a way, you asked, is there a more intrinsic way of seeing why this had to be the solution? This is what popped out.
Well, if you want, I can give another example of where that expression pops up, which is maybe more closely related.
Okay.
All right, let me write something up. Which is, if you just look at, well, this will happen. So it happens in n equals 1 Yang mills. It happens in n equals 2 Yang mills. But this is maybe just a triviality. But maybe just Bernoulli numbers are never popping up all over the place. But if you look at transformational like this, and then you ask, what is the transformation law, say infinitesimal transformation law for V instead of e to the V, then I don't remember all the signs in junk, but it looks something like this. It looks something like V over, and then one of them is probably e to the V minus 1, and then the other one's e to the V. So it's something like this plus saying maybe B over 1 minus E to the minus, it's something like this. So I don't know if that's closely related. Maybe it hints that somehow you should take the string field and exponentiate it with respect to the star product. But so maybe this is a very, I don't know, for some reason those exponentials are very common. I don't know.
Does this come up in the string solution?
The second thing before?
Yes,
no, I haven't. I'm afraid I haven't seen the formula. So that's for infinitesimal lambda, or?
Yeah. So it's just some identity that you could take it any context that those two equations are related.
So for the superstring field, or for superstring field theory, that is the gauge transformation of the string field.
Yeah, but not the infinitesimal lambda.
Yeah, no, it is. It's just the infinitesimal version of the. The two are equivalent.
I mean, you did say that the solution was almost pure gauge.
So the way that Barton wrote it was delta E to the V equals lambda bar plus E to the V.
Well, it is Q lambda and eta zero.
Yeah, okay, so this is equal. So in Yang mills, this is a chiral super. One is anti chiral superfield, this is chiral superfield. Right?
And so chiral means that it's annihilated by Q, and anti-chiral means so it's Q of omega and A to omega. So certainly there's a relation between the superstring field theory, open superstring field theory, and superangulars. The zero mode of this is this. So, okay, so that's in this.
So how do you get the middle formula easily?
Well, that's for Warren. That comes from, that's probably in Wessenbeck, right?
I don't know what's in Wessenbeck. Why are you asking me that question?
Certainly is narrow. It must be there, right?
Yeah.
Question is, can anybody other than the authors find the things that
are in? I'm pretty sure it's a one line derivation. I just don't remember the line.
Well, just for the variation.
Okay. What?
Just for the variation of the formula on top.
I really remember these L things, right? I don't remember
that's in your book. Yeah, that's you don't need to do that notation. If you just say, if you just take lambda as a column vector instead of being a matrix, then you can just write it as matrix multiplication. Of course, if you take lambda to be a matrix instead, then it's all with multiple commutators and junk. So, okay, so those two equations are in different notations, so maybe that's a little bit confusing. But actually, the second line is in the same notation as was used in string theory, in the sense that in that one, the star product was always implied. So here, you could think of the same thing, except it's a commutator that's always implied.
So there was a general formula of something like this, that if I remember correctly.
If commutators are f of d, both a commutators of d times a prime of d, where a prime of d, I'm not sure if it is the same or not, d acting from left, or is it f of d acting from right. By the left minus the right. So if you compromise this, f is all previously power.
F is right.
If v equals e to the power v, then v equals log v. So something is maybe. Maybe this is not.
Yeah, this also looks familiar because there's a second way to get this by solving a differential equation that maybe is the same thing.
So Warren, what did you wrote the Vx by adjoint by commutator?
Yeah, right.
So in Dave's question, lambda is a closed form, right?
Yeah.
And K is a closed, is a VRST invariant string field, so they're both kind of closed forms.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, you can think of lambda as field strength for some of the engaged field. And that makes this formula somewhat reminiscent of that formula over there.
What was K again? Pardon? What was K again?
K was left part of a derivation.
It commuted with Q.
Yeah.
It was built out of the coasts.
Energy less transfer.
Well, are these mathematical formulas somehow very special for Chern-Simons or?
I'm not sure what you mean exactly.
Well, the string field theory is sort of Chern-Simons-like action. That's what we're solving. Just trying to tie some of the symbols to things that may be familiar.
So the right-hand side of West Seminole Witch.
Yeah, but that's not the one Martin has been solving.
Yeah, but they're related. I mean, as Warren keeps saying.
Solution is for this Witten string field theory, right? I mean, that which Barton reminded us several times doesn't really exist. So, I mean, is there a stubbly version of this solution? Can you translate something in Witten's theory into something in sub theory?
Presumably, you could. I don't know. The stub theory that exists that is safer for closed strings is some sort of field redefinition of the Witten theory. So perhaps you could carry that field redefinition on the solution, but nobody has made this clear or said whether it looks tractable or how does it change.
Also, the stubs are pieces of propagator in the standard frame, so it would be more natural to start with the Siegel gauge solution. Than this gauge.
So maybe we need the stub version in Schnabel gauge.
If you don't have stubs, is it clear something goes wrong, or is it just possible something?
Well. That has been a very murky thing, but as far as I know, the status remains that if you try to see if this action solves the master equation of Batalion and Wilkowiski, which is necessary for consistent quantization, Thorne tried it in his physics report, and he said, no, it doesn't, and they're singular terms, and I'm not sure how to solve this. And the status more or less remained there. Nobody knows how to do this well, or nobody has tried hard enough.
The fact that the same conjecture works so well, does that mean that there's probably something?
Well, it's a classical statement about the classical tension of a D-brain in bosonic strings.
What is the problem exactly? Can you?
Well,
that's a bit more.
Exactly. Well, I don't remember too much all the details, but I have to say remind you of the flavor. You have a master equation on Batalion and Wilkowiski. So any action that is supposed to be consistent and has a consistent quantization will satisfy this equation, where this is a second order operator, essentially derivative with respect to fields, derivative with respect to anti-fields. And this is the bracket in field-anti-field space. So when you take Witten string field theory, phi q phi plus phi cubed, you find that this thing satisfies S equals zero. And that's saying that basically the classical theory is H-invariant, and the classical theory is okay. Nevertheless, delta S is apparently different from zero, and it's singular. And the delta S basically takes the action and differentiates with respect to fields and anti-fields, which, you know, these are some indices, and these are I and I bar singular, some bases over here. Now, when you compute this delta on this action,
the quadratic term is no problem, it's zero, delta of this term. But delta of psi cubed, delta of phi cubed, is non-zero, and essentially is taking the cubic vertex and differentiating two lines and joining them together. So it basically is computing, oops, I shouldn't have made this, but it basically is computing a tadpole graph in which you have a cubic vertex and you glue it together. And you glue it together without the propagator. So actually, if you want a picture of this, this tadpole graph is this. If you have a written vertex at time t, here is the time t that is propagating this thing. I'll do it like this. So that's this thing, this line is this one. I followed this train and look at that. So basically, this delta phi cube is computing this in the limit as t goes to zero, and as you can imagine, that is exactly where closed strings get produced. So you got closed strings going into the vacuum, and this turns out to be divergent and a little unpleasant.
That's the same problem even in quantum field theory. This data operator is always singular. We don't say that anything else doesn't exist because that.
Well, but then you know how to fix that problem. It's a mathematical problem with the renormalization or things like that. Here it's a little more serious because it's physical closed strings going into the vacuum. So, as far as I can tell, nobody has solved this. Now, the solution that. I said in a funny way that in a sense the closed string field theory is much safer than the open string field theory in this way, because in closed string field theory you put extra little, you already have a non-polynomial theory, so instead of having a vertex that is just joining three strings like that, you can put a little piece of surface to this, just called stubs, which would be the analog, instead of saying in Witten's theory that three strings interact like that, would be to add a little piece of surface. And in closed string theory, since it's non-polynomial, you don't care too much that this will make the theory will still be non-polynomial, maybe even a little less natural, but still non-polynomial. But by the time you compute the delta S, the great advantage is that when, if you have this and you now close it up with a zero-length propagator, you get the regular Riemann surface. So this term is finite and well-defined, and then you can change the action by adding quantum terms, and all this equation holds without regularization, without anything, holds on the nodes. So in the case of the open string, if you put this little extra pieces of surface again, when you now form, now your vertex is here, has a little piece of surface, when you close this, it's a regular surface. This term is non-zero, but now you try to fix it because it's calculable. The difficulty of this is that this is a singular limit, and as far as I can tell, people may try to regulate it in some ways or another, but nobody has done a clear and convincing job.
In which way to singular?
Well, it's a singular Riemann surface. You're at the end of the moduli space. This is conformally equivalent to an annulus. There's two boundaries, the boundary here and the boundary here. And when this becomes zero length, this is going to an annulus that has a very tiny little hole here. So it's the end of the moduli space, the clostering end of the moduli space. And so, you know, like we were having a discussion yesterday. Whenever I've talked to mathematicians, whenever you talk to physicists, people like the Whitman-Strongfield theory very much because it's associative, it's a little easier to treat. But if you talk to mathematicians, they like this one much better because it's more well-defined. No singularities and things like that. And with this thing, you have homotopy associative. The multiplication is not associative. So if you have A star B star C minus A star B star C, there is again a fourth product. In the case of closed strings, this was Li, but here is just associativity. So there's something like A, B, C minus plus Q, A, B, C, the failure of this thing to be a derivation. Again, so you just keep fixing it. And so if you're trying to answer the question, what is the space of string fields, and you think you must restrict it so that it's associative, and it's been always very subtle to know where to stop the string field in order to make products associative. If you have homotopy associativity, product associativity is not disappears, and it's sort of not that relevant, and perhaps it's been very misleading. But there's a tension here in which somehow the regular, safe version of the theory at this moment looks a lot less tractable than the somewhat singular one.
Do these theories depend on the size of the stubs?
Yes, the off-shell theory depends on the size of the stub. There's a minimum length that you must put the stub in order to get a nice cell decomposition of moduli space. But so you can change the length of the stub, and these are equivalent theories up to field redefinitions. And so the theory with stub and without stubs, these are at least at the classical level, they're just simple field redefinitions. But at the quantum level, they have different completion.
So the Whitman theory is nice because it looks like a Chern-Simons action. Is there something like a Chern-Simons action that you can build out of the non-associative? Is there a natural, simply natural structure?
Well, I don't think so. It just doesn't look anymore like in Chern-Simons you cannot put more fields because it's three forms and you're done. But in here you would just put more things and there's no problem. So if there would be some sort of A infinity version of Chern-Simons, I don't know how that would look. Certainly mathematicians don't talk about Chern-Simons, of course, in this language, but they feel A infinity is as natural or more natural than associativity. So, it's a strange situation.
So is this a property of the star product or the BRST charge that the homotopy associated with the condition holds? I guess it's not generic for any non-associative algebra that there exists some Q that and some three bracket.
Right. If it's generic non-associative, that's not obvious that you can do it.
Well, yeah, there's something, of course, I think there, if you have a given non-associative algebra, there are conditions under which such a homotopy can exist, and might not be very general, might not exist in general, but in string theory we know it always exists. It's sort of the, here is the fact that S channel and T channel, if you are to cover the moduli space of a disk with four punctures, so you put a puncture on the real line, a puncture here at 1, say 1, 2, 3, and 4. You put at 0, you put the first puncture, P1. At 1, you put the third puncture, P3. At infinity, you put the last puncture, P4. And the second puncture has to go from here to here. An S channel produces some part of it. T channel produces another part of it near another degeneration. And in the case of Witten associativity, the fact that they together fill it. And but if you put the stub, the propagators don't manage to do all the work, so they cover less, and the missing region is the homotopy.
How do I see that?
Sorry?
How do we see that?
How do you see that? It's the fact that the four-point interaction is going to supply the rest. So it's going to be an integral over moduli space, and Q acting on it, on the four-point interaction, is going to go to the boundary of that region. So it produces this edge and this edge, and these two configurations are these two points. So you match boundaries. And in the case of closed strings, it's the blackboard is full, but it's more like this. You have a puncture at 0, a puncture at 1, and a puncture at infinity. If three channels, so this is four punctured sphere, one puncture here, one puncture there, and the last one moving around. If you were to produce a perfect cell decomposition of moduli space, it would look like S channel producing all this region, T channel all this region, and U channel all the region away. And this would be the three terms in the Jacobi identity, A, B, C, plus D, C, A, plus C and D equals 0 would be the perfect matching of these three regions. But that was apparently a theorem, or sort of a theorem, that in reality, however you define a vertex, you get a region here, you get a region here, and you get the exterior of some region here, and you have to produce the middle thing, and that's again the C. So in the case of the closed strings, there was no way to produce a cover of moduli space, and you need the homotopy to fill the hole between the three Feynman diagrams. And so, again, you know, anything that is not quite a Lie algebra may not be possible to write as a homotopy Lie algebra. But somehow, in the case of strings, it is possible. And if you do a star product of two photons, you're going to get lots of infinite number of string fields, just like Martin is doing multiplication of two vacua, you get the vacua infinitely many descendants. So star multiplication of two photons states is going to give you presumably something that goes number two, some sort of dual photon, a dual version of a photon that goes number two, and all kinds of
things. No, there can't be photons. You have clock oscillators, you have two Lorentz indices. There will be some symmetric tensor and some scalar and.
Yeah, dual to tachyon end.
Tachyon end.
Why can't you get a momentum contracting all of these
things? Momentum will be the sum of the two momenta. That's right.
Which should all be collinear, then, because.
But do you get zero if momenta not collinear?
No, the momenta can be arbitrary, just the star product adds the momenta.
Why do you say you can do a photon and then
the star multiplying the photons? Just imagine you take a state, forget about star product, just take a vacuum and act on it with two vertex operators for a photon.
Yeah.
It's nothing like a photon again.
It's a dual. Why do you say it's not?
Why do you say dual?
Well, it goes number two, so it should be anti-field rather than.
Yeah, so you have CDX. CDX is
yeah.
CDX.
Yeah, okay, so you can do OPE between two del X's.
Well, DX with one of the K's. With one of the E to the IK dot X.
Yeah.
That leaves one DX.
Yeah.
But two C's.
Not this, not the X, because a cubic interaction of the Arbenack photon bunches. Right? So OP of B and DX and DX doesn't produce DX term.
No, but DX, it's a non-zero momentum, so you have C, DX, E to the IK dot X.
Yeah.
I've totally lost what you guys are saying, but isn't there an F cube term in open string theory? So isn't that enough to.
It's a zero on shell.
Why are we talking on shell? And why is it zero on shell? I don't understand anything.
Because if it's homotopy algebra, but if you put on physical states, it should be usual Lie algebra. So
well, it's not Lie algebra for open string.
Sorry, associative. It should be usual associative, because this precisely means that on cohomology you have usual associative algebra. So I'm just wondering what kind of associative algebra you have on physical states. Can you take two photons, multiply them, and get something?
F cubed term is F cubed on shell. I don't see what's wrong with that.
What is it?
Oh, F cubed.
I still don't understand why you can't get a dual photon. So you just contract the DX with an EVIK dot F.
If you star multiply two things, two photons, you get an element of the Hilbert space that has two vertex operators acting on the vacuum.
Yes.
And if you do the OPE between the two vertex operators, you find a scalar and you find a symmetric tensor.
Mm-hmm. I contract this GX with the jet.
Right, okay.
But then the number of the alpha must be even, right? So I think.
But then the DX will be contracted as K, some, right?
Yeah. So one of the DX and K. So you're asking the space is something like over the same thing in the X and the X. And also the star product of K.
Okay. Yes.
Right.
Yes. This contains a photon component, so
yes.
It's you need to take an indecent contact with this, right? But this conscious, right? This was considered second function is dx, cx into that dx, dx into the second dx, and some conformal factors. But
why is it considered
dx? Because now the dx is
so what they contract with is in that k dot x.
Yeah,
but there will be some plus k2 plus k3 that has to vanish.
Shall we just
say by delta function, by momentum conservation, k1 plus k2 plus k3 must vanish. Yeah. And if you do the contractions you are suggesting, if you contract one del x with some e to the kx, you pull out k down all three k's.
On shell, this gives
we can
on shell. So higher derivative, maybe higher derivative correction can be punished.
But can I just answer your previous question? So I think you haven't done the contraction properly. You will get one term.
Okay.
You can contract the other del x with the other k. So you get k1 plus k2. So this would be like a photon with polarization that is proportional to its momentum.
The only advantage is if you kind of deal with there would be some over both orders, right? But that's not what's going on.
Yeah, okay, for non-abelian,
For even for abelian, maybe. And for non-abelian, it's not much.
For abelian, the star product of two photons is zero overlap with photon. For non-abelian, that's not true.
If k squared is non-zero, it's non-vanishing.
Well, so the question was unshell, right?
Was it?
Yeah, your question was about unshell photon. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, okay.
I think it's not vanishing in either case, but certainly in case two is not zero.
Summarize tensor structures of tree and group amplitudes.
Which frame of reference?
You mean what you mean tensor structure?
Like the momentum or polarization or something.
You mean the amps? Oh, you want the index structure?
Yeah,
the actual one.
Okay.
First game. Suppose it's okay.
You won't be interested in that one.
You just want to arc the point the index is actually.
Okay, so for what we're going to do. So I'm sure
yes, the question is, how do you get the ATA from the Q spinner?
So do you want to see how to get that from the Q spinner, or do you want to see? Because, what do you want to know exactly?
Final answer, maybe?
Okay. The final answer is not going to be the Q spinner. So there's a key on the background on the same key. One loop is the same guy, and then there's making more of all that. TATA part of the fork, and but then you have two extra derivatives, and then there's the two integral that is here. And the way it appears is that so this is some combination of momenta like Q1, Q2. I don't know if you remember the indices for something like that. Sometimes something that depends on the you see that the integrand, before you calculate about the body line, that you have the power of the number of derivatives is given by, so this is here, there is no power of k, but here it's k, so this is the capital of k to the 2, to k to the 4, okay? So, what happens is that, as you know, it's not trivial to see. In space, and actually the tensor structure is the same here, true by one group. And in fact, it's not true as well, it's the same. The polarization dependence is the same up to two groups. Okay? So, you can ask the question whether this is going to happen to any loop or not. So, what would be the form of the forward return amplitude, the type to string, any genus of that? So what you find is that what you find several things is that it depends exactly what you do. So if you do the RNS approach, what happens is that in that kind of computation only the even spin structure sector contributing. There's no way you can get the odd spin structure sector to contribute. Because the Earth spin structure sector for the forward amplitude, I mean, it's just zero and shape.
I'm sorry, you're talking about three loop and higher here?
Yeah.
On the right hand side. Using RNS, is it possible to compute three loop and higher? I mean, even.
Two loop
is okay. But three loop and higher. Cannot use RNS?
No, but I mean, what you can see is that you can look, then first she was going to work on the internal theory, the tensorial structure in terms of the origin of the tensor. So what happens is that when you form a free loop, in this loop, it's in your NSS, what could happen is that you could get contribution from the torsion structure center, where you get contraction between the physical change in operators. So it seems that you could generate some term that has a different tensorial structure than the one that you actually were around. So, but if you use the pure spinner format, then you can see that Earth and Venus form on time. There's no contraction from possible contraction from the DX that would come from the vision. So certainly, so you expect that the leading contribution to the amplitude for the return amplitude in that range, the return structure would be the same way. At some point, you are not sure whether or not what happened. I don't know any argument in 10 dimensions that shows that if I divide the genus J amplitude for the return by the tree level one, that all the polarization dependence will be cancelled.
There is an argument.
In 4 dimensions, I can do that.
So this is Baldwin model standard.
Okay, for any perforce problem, I'm sorry?
For any maximal supersymmetric theory, so paying mills and. So this is n equals 8 supergravity or d equals 10 supergravity, whenever it's maximum. Yeah, yeah. The argument is that the number of massive states is equal to the number of massive states in the multiplet is equal to the square of the number of massive states in the multiplet. So for example, for Supang Mills, a massive multiplet has 64. What is it? Massive says 8 plus 8, so massive, I don't know, 8 plus 8 squared. And the same for supergravity. So you can show that the S matrix of 2 to 2 scattering is uniquely determined with polarizations. So there's only one way to contract the polarizations in a supersymmetric way. So that's how you explain the T8, T8 out of the fourth always comes in that combination.
Even for high order, right?
Yeah.
For all over.
So I don't know how to prove this using string theory, but just using this general argument, it must be true.
And then the all loop the L loop quantity divided by the tree has no dependence on polarization. That is okay. Suppose the arguments are correct. But actually, anyway. So the way to prove it by doing string computation. What you can do by inspection on the pure spinner form is that the worry that you could have is start from genus, right? So now what happens is that if you use the pure spinner computation and use the zero mode saturation that you described at the end of the lecture, what you find is that the amplitude is over the amplitude of genus. So the integration around the moduli. Times some quantity that will be and then there is some power of the momentum that will be exactly 2J, so that's preliminary building but the structural form. So this is what gives that the building at the point unit of the probability continuum amplitude starts at the unit of the form. And that is a consequence of the general situation.
Right. So Carlos Maffra is the one who showed that these are equivalent, the LBT 18. You have to do manipulations in both things, removing BRST trivial things. And so it's not still obvious. It's just not
obvious.
But it should be. There should be some inaccuracy.
I mean, the gross and width and form derivation was very simple. And it's half a page. You can see it almost immediately.
So this is
no, I did the one of the circuit. Three levels more complicated. One loop was very simple. You use 5 points to see that.
No, it was much simpler.
Yeah, sure.
Then you have to covariantize it.
Yeah, sure.
So I think it's I think this is the easiest way to do it covariantly. I've never seen any other way to get it covariant.
But you say it's a certain amount of manipulation before you use this.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. You can try to ask yourself, I mean, what you work in your work, if you look, for example, that has three numbers. So it looks like maybe you could get maybe some unicity from the tree, the one loop and maybe the two loop. But I mean, I'm not sure it gains enough. This is enough just to say that.
I wouldn't think there is a unique touch of this problem.
That's in sense. You see, when you say that there is a set to the invariance, I mean, and then there are said to be, I mean, it seems. It's something to contribute to the calculative part of the type of effective action. So you want that, for example, if you believe that you can relate, by say, to the invariant some higher derivative than function to some higher genus contribution, they don't have the same tensile structure. So certainly, there are good reasons to.
You can ask probability?
Yes.
I mean, the Riemann tensor is inert, so any function of the Riemann tensor will do it.
Right, but I mean, if you get the new structure, you have a higher level of that. That means if you have any question, so
there could be a different why? Be a different expression multiplied by an invariant. The pitch order should be invariant rather than connect.
Yeah,
for both the pure spinners and the string fields, are there sort of a list of technical problems people have in mind as the next things to solve? And maybe different people have different lists, but it's worth writing this down on the wiki.
Okay. Well, there are two ways you can go. Either you can try to do things new things that haven't been done before, or you can try to fix things which So things to fix. Okay, so Pierre mentioned at the end, so the these poles with lambdas, that it would be nice to get a better way to deal with them. So another thing that hasn't been done yet that I think should be done is to show equivalence. So in Lycombe gauge, you should be able to show equivalence to the Lycombe Green Schwartz. So this was done, for example, with RNS and bosonic string, and it should be possible, but and that will give a proof that the theory is unitary. Mm-hmm.
Again, you're not mentioned now, but if you'd like to write these down and put them on that, we can. We have these five different segments, you know, pure spinner string field theory.
Oh,
okay. You know, if each segment had a list of not just deep questions, but what to do.
I think that's a good topic for discussion, but we should prepare ourselves a little better for that and make a serious list and with some content in it rather than say a few words. For next discussion, maybe we could talk between several of us and prepare a list for